I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Ever snore so loud it registered as an earthquake, or you woke up with a throat as dry as the Sahara Desert and a headache that could stop a locomotive? Well, I've had all of these because I have sleep apnea. Hi, I'm Scott Mitchell. Yep, I wear a machine plugged into a wall attached to a hose every night. Sound Sleep Medical changed all of this for me, and they can do that for you. They specialize in providing oral appliance therapy for individuals suffering from sleep disorders. In many cases, oral appliances have proven to be as effective as CPAP machines in treating sleep apnea. The lack of sleep is a serious health risk and has been linked to heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and even depression. The oral appliance I got from Sound Sleep Medical has freed me from a hose. I can go anywhere, and I've never slept better. Call Sound Sleep Medical today. Seriously, for a limited time, the first 25 people that call get a free consultation worth $200. Call 801-783-5451. It's 801-783-5451.
Welcome into another edition of the Jazz Notes Podcast. My name is Cleon Wall. Jeremiah Jensen joining me here. Free agency is going on, but wow, what a free agency it's been so far in the NBA, and that includes the Utah Jazz. Before we get to free agency, I want to preface something. A lot of fans out there may realize that in the past I've said, Mike Conley, I really don't want to see this trade. And you probably heard all of them. You know, my theory was I didn't like small backcourt. I really didn't like his contract, even though it was for just for 2 years. It was just a huge contract. I thought the Jazz were going to build slowly, and with getting Conley, that seemed to rush things a bit. And I was just wondering if they were going to be able to find someone else to go along with him. And then I really questioned, and I remember you and I talked about this, Jeremiah, was he going to be the guy that was going to take him to the next step? And the reason why I felt no at that time was this, that I looked at the Golden State Warriors still as the standard, and you know, we weren't anticipating any injuries. We knew how bad they were against the Houston Rockets, and they still may struggle against the Houston Rockets. But I guess what I was trying to say is I wasn't sure Mike Conley was going to do that. I still thought that they needed more. Well, here you go. Here's your more. I didn't think the Jazz would do it. I really didn't. We heard Justin Zanuck say, we're going, maybe not all in, but we're going to be aggressive.
Yes.
And I've heard that from GMs in the past, whether that's the Jazz GMs or GMs from other teams. And I just thought, it's nice that you say this, but the Jazz, to me, don't really have that much of a history of being aggressive during free agency. It was nice that they got Mike Conley. I thought they were going to kind of sit on that, keep Derek Favors, and kind of build around the edges. And that's exactly not what they did here in this instance.
He said aggressive, and you take that at face value. And it, just because a team is going to be aggressive doesn't mean they're going to be able to achieve their goals. And so I thought, well, you know what? They're going to be aggressive by looking to see if there's some guys of value that don't get picked up the first day that they could get on the cheap. Some valuable vets, maybe guys with championship experience, and who knows who those might be, that they would be able to land some of those guys later on in free agency. I had no idea that they would make the splash that they did and go all in and go big right out of the gate and be one of the major players in free agency and land a guy that scores 18 points per game, one of the best three-point shooters in the game. They said, look, we should have listened, I guess. They said they were going to go get a shooter or shooters. They said they'd be aggressive in free agency. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. This move to get Bojan Bogdanović was aggressive, and right out of the gate, they knew exactly what they wanted, and they went all in and they got him. He's everything they need. in one package. He shoots the ball from three at a 42 to 45% clip, depending on where he's at around the three-point line. But 42% for threes, 45% from the corner three, which we know how much the Jazz love the corner three, as do most teams in the NBA nowadays. There's one side of the court on the corner three where he's above 50%. He is a sharpshooter. He is a guy that can knock down shots. The thing about Bogdanović that I really love, though, is last year when Oladipo got hurt with the Pacers, and maybe a lot of Jazz fans didn't follow the Pacers last year and what was going on there, but they needed somebody when Oladipo went down to step up offensively because they just didn't have offense on that team, especially a guy that could create his own shot. So you knew that Bogdanović was a great shooter. People didn't know how good he could be in ISO, how good he could be cutting to the rim, attacking the rim. He did a lot of one-on-one stuff last year, and he was good at it. His scoring average went up to 21 points per game after Oladipo got hurt. He can score 20 points per game. So now the Jazz have added Mike Conley, who scores 20 points a game, and Bogdanović, who scores 20 points a game. Ricky Rubio wasn't scoring 20 a game last year. Derek Favors wasn't scoring 20 last year and knocking down threes at a 45% clip. They added all that this offseason. That's a game changer for a team that was second in the NBA last year in defense. Now, look, they're going to have to give up something on defense, but they have changed their team offensively drastically. They are now a dynamic offensive team. Instead of having one guy that can create his own shot, you now have three guys that can create their own shot, and you have four guys that can knock down threes. You add Joe Ingles to the mix there.
And you could add Dante Exum. Again, I know
off
it's
the bench.
If he gets healthy, but when he's healthy, he creates for himself.
Yes.
And at times, yes, he does create for other people too.
That's his game. That's what he does. He's got that great first burst. He gets past people. He's great in the ISO, both offensively and defensively. Royce O'Neal can knock down threes. George Niang can knock down threes. All of a sudden, the Jazz are loaded with shooters. This is a different Jazz team, not the same team we saw last year. Last year, we saw a team where guys would cheat. You know, the opposing team would cheat a little bit and not guard a Jay Crowder like they would somebody who was and it killed the Jazz in the playoffs. I mean, look back at that Houston series and all the threes that they missed. That's not going to happen again. It's not going to happen with this lineup. They solved that problem. And now the Jazz have a team that could legitimately be top 10 offense and top 10 defense. And you know what happens when you have a team that has top 10 offense and top 10 defense?
Usually an NBA champion.
You are a contender for an NBA championship.
The one thing you said was that the Jazz are going to give up a little bit on defense. The funny thing is, but they got more shooting. The funny thing is, the other guy that they signed for $5 million for a season, or for two seasons, excuse me, $5 million per season, is Ed Davis. He's going to slip in very nicely as a backup center to Rudy Gobert. No, he's not a shooter, but he loves to rebound, and I think he loves to play defense too. And I think he saw the writing on the wall out there and thought, maybe I could get money somewhere else, but maybe this is a perfect situation for me where I can walk in, I'm going to get playing time, and when Rudy's not having a good night, I can play for him. Or maybe I'm just going to go and I'm going to anchor the defense of that second unit. And by the way, the defense of that second unit could look very good against other defenses, if you think about it. Again, a healthy Dante Exum, Royce O'Neal, you've got Ed Davis. Joe Ingles is going to play on the second team a lot, too, and he's sneakily good on defense, too. No, he doesn't have speed, but he's got smarts. That's going to be a pretty darn good second-team defense that you have right there. This Jazz team is very intriguing right now on both sides of the ball, and I think a lot of people are recognizing that.
It's not just us in Salt Lake City saying these things. This is around the country. Immediately when Bojan Bogdanović signed with the Jazz, it got instant reaction from people who cover the NBA. They're like, whoa. So the Jazz just added Conley, and then they got Bogdanović. All of a sudden, they're looking at the Jazz roster and think, this is a really, really, really good basketball team. There's not a lot of weaknesses with this team. And the way that the things are wide open now in the West and really across the NBA, we'll see what Kawhi does. That's going to be a major, who knows what happens when he makes his decision. We'll have a different conversation after that. But as of right now, you can make a case that the Jazz are the best team in the West. Now, Houston is still good. The Lakers, obviously, we'll see what they do with the rest of their roster. We'll see what Kawhi's decision is. But just LeBron and Anthony Davis, you have to respect that. And they're and throw Kyle Kuzma in there, who's a terrific player. They're going to be good. And, you know, Denver and Portland are going to be good as well. And so the West isn't going to get any easier, but the Warriors aren't the Warriors anymore. And the Jazz have now built a roster that can compete against Houston.
When the rumors came out that the Jazz were interested in Bojan Bogdanović, I'd probably say the first thought in my mind was, oh, that's nice. I'm glad they're interested.
Yeah, of course.
Because
Who isn't? I
really imagine that he would probably end up back in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
That they would probably give him a little bit more, that the Jazz weren't going to offer more.
The Lakers had interest, too, and the Lakers had more money.
And that would have been a good fit for LeBron also, if you put him in there. If LeBron plays the four and Anthony Davis plays the five and Bojan plays the three, or you basically interchange all of them, that's a heck of a lineup. But in saying that, I thought that the Jazz wouldn't offer enough money because they wanted to keep Derek Favors. Okay, so they signed Bojan. Derek Favors says, well, he's eventually traded. But the amount of money, 4 years, $73 million, basically a little over $18 million a season. Did the Jazz overpay for Bojan Bogdanović?
No. They did not. He's going to be a value. If he gives them that kind of production, if you're going to be able to get 18 to 20 points per game from a guy and he shoots 42 to 45% from the three-point line in the NBA, he's worth every penny if that's what they're paying him. Basically, they replaced Derek Favors' money that they were giving Derek Favors and gave it to Bojan Bogdanović. That's why they had to trade Favors. They basically gave him away, but that's how it needed to be. They're basically trading Derek Favors for Bojan Bogdanović. So instead of having a player that is terrific on defense and has the skill set that Derek Favors has, you're now upgrading it to an offensive guy and the guy that can shoot the three and spread the floor, which is what the Jazz needed to move to. So that was the reasoning behind that move. And they had Derek Favors in a position where they could do that. If nothing better came along and they weren't able to get that, then sure, they would have kept Derek Favors. But they went into this offseason knowing they had to upgrade that offense. They had to get shooters. They had to be better at three-point line. They had to spread the floor out better. And Derek Favors being essentially your backup center with that much money or you know kind of out of position with the four, it wasn't a great fit, and they had to find a way to open things up a little bit, and that's why they made that. These are tough decisions.
Oh, yeah.
Derek Favors spent 8 years in 8-plus years in Utah. Nine players in Jazz history that have played more years in a Jazz uniform than Derek. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Third all-time in rebounds for the Jazz. Fans love him. He's going to be missed. He always had something great to say about Utah, but this is the business of the NBA, and you have to make tough decisions. And really, that's what has impressed me the most about the Jazz this offseason. I think there was criticism last year that there was just too much loyalty to what they had last year, that there was too much, okay, we got a good chemistry thing going on. So chemistry is going to be the difference here. And everyone was overlooking the flaws that that team had last year. Well, any of that criticism is now gone because the Jazz went into this offseason and they were determined to get better and they were willing to say goodbye to some very, very good people. And we know how much the Jazz organization values good people. We know how much this community values good people. Those are tough decisions that the Jazz front office had to make, but they were willing to make them because they want to win. And I think this was a message sent to Jazz fans, to the organization, to teams around the league, that the Jazz are in it to win it, and they're willing to make these decisions to do so.
Before we go back to the Bogdanović contract, which I want to address, it's interesting. I have some friends that I know that were not happy that the Jazz did what they did last season, which was basically stand pat and just let's see how things play out. But the eye was always on the prize, Jeremiah, that this year was the year that free agency, the Jazz were going to have more money, that free agency was big. There were lots of free agents that the Jazz could possibly be interested in, a lot of other teams. We know they weren't going to get Kevin Durant or anyone like that, but that this was the season. I don't think you can have it both ways, meaning I don't think you could be upset with the Jazz last year and grumble and complain because any free agents last year or possibly even trades last year might have eaten into the Jazz being able to open up the amount that they could to get the free agents or trades that they made this season. I really think that the Jazz said, we're just going to be patient. We're going to play this game. We're going to see how it pans out. We think we know how it's going to pan out. We're not sure we're going to get above maybe the 4 seed, maybe the 3 seed at most. But we really think this is about the cap of this team. Maybe they get better. Maybe they won't. But really, we're going to wait until the next season. Then we're going to make those hard decisions. Real quickly on the Bogdanovich contract that I want to make, I'd say it's only going to get ugly possibly in that last year because he is 30 years old. Other than that, he's worth $18 million a season. He's basically going to be coming in here. You talked about all he can do with his shooting. He can play make. But in reality, he's coming in here, in my opinion, as kind of the third option. And I think he's okay with that. I think they're going to draw up plays for him. He's going to be successful here in Utah, but he's not going to be the man. But he is going to help the man out, and that's Donovan Mitchell. And he is going to help the other guy out, and that's Mike Conley. Because he's going to be able, like we talked about before, take pressure off those guys because he can do certain things that maybe those guys can't. And, like we've talked about, he's also tall. He's 6'8". He can play power forward. He can play small forward. He plays a little bit of both. And he's a deadly shooter. The Jazz got the sniper that they were looking for.
Yeah, and I think that's why this works so well. So you're talking about how this is helping everybody. Well, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for guys that complement each other. And so Donovan can play off the ball. Mike Conley can play off the ball. Bogdanovich can play off the ball. Joe Ingles can play off the ball. But they all can also run pick and roll as a point guard, right? I mean, Bogdanovich can play in that way too. These are guys that are very versatile, and they can all shoot. And so you add all these skills they have together, it spreads out the floor. This is going to make Rudy Gobert better too, both offensively and defensively, in my opinion. This is great for everybody, and this is why the Jazz are going to be so formidable next season. This is why they're contenders, because they have a group of guys that are going to play so well together, and in today's NBA, they're going to be able to spread the floor. They're going to be a terrific three-point shooting team. They're going to be better offensively, and they're still going to be good defensively because they have the defensive player of the year anchoring everything in the back, who could make up for some of the sins that some of these guys have, some of these shortcomings that maybe some of these guys have. He'll be able to make up for a lot of that. It's a lot to put on Rudy Gobert, but I think he wants to take that on, and he's the defensive player of the year for a reason. So if he's up to that challenge and he's the defensive player of the year next year, then the Jazz had a special season.
And unlike a Kyrie Irving or a Jimmy Butler, and I'm not saying the Jazz were in it all with talks to those guys, but I'm just pulling out two players as examples. Unlike those guys who both play, one plays small forward and one plays point guard, they're very ball-dominant players. They're going to want the ball in their hand at the end of games. I think that the guys that the Jazz got, it's not going to stunt the growth of Donovan Mitchell.
No.
In fact, I think it enhances it even more because I still think, for the most part, at the end of games, you still want the ball in Donovan Mitchell's hands. But if something comes up, now they have the other guys that can create and be able to do something with the ball if they say, no, we're going to take the ball out of Donovan's hands.
So Donovan Mitchell has been terrific in his 2 years, just phenomenal. He's exceeded all expectations. If there's a knock on Donovan Mitchell's game, it's the fact that he has been inefficient offensively, and he's been turnover prone. Well, he's been forced to, in a lot of situations, to be more of a point guard instead of a shooting guard. He's been put in situations that maybe he's not comfortable in. Maybe it's not his best fit. So he's had to play a lot of point guard in the first 2 years. Especially in the playoffs that first year. It was pretty rough. He's also oftentimes thrown the ball with 4-3 seconds left on the shot clock and has to throw up garbage. That hurts your efficiency. That hurts your shooting percentage. That's not going to have to happen anymore because he's not going to be put in that position. He's got a lot of guys that can take that pressure off. When I talk about that pressure, that burden to be your sole offensive producer on your team is a heavy burden to carry, especially for a young player like that. He's learning. He's trying to figure stuff out. He's going to make mistakes, and that's what he's done. That's why he struggled with some inefficiency in his offensive game. Well, you surround him with these guys that can take some of that pressure off. All of a sudden, Donovan Mitchell becomes a much more efficient player. The game becomes a lot easier for Donovan. His confidence grows. His production grows. And all of a sudden, Donovan Mitchell is an all-star. That's the goal for next year. And I think that's possible. And these guys around him is going to make that possible. And if the Jazz have a great start next year instead of a crappy start like they've had the last 2 years, then maybe the Jazz have multiple All-Stars next year. This is going to be a really good team. And Donovan Mitchell, like you said, we talk about all these moves. It's all really about trying to take advantage of having Donovan Mitchell. He is the star. He is the main cog here. He is the future. And all these moves that they have made complement him and are going to make him a better player in the short term and in the long term.
And as we mentioned before, really, when this comes down to it, they are there to complement him, like you talked about. And the Jazz are only going to go as far as Donovan Mitchell, because out of all the players we've talked about, I think Mike Conley's great. I also think that Bojan Bogdanovic is great. I think Rudy Gobert is great. But in reality, he is the most dynamic of them all. And so the Jazz really need him to continue to be dynamic. But it's got to be nice for him that he's got a little bit more to play with instead of throwing it to Ricky Rubio late in the shot clock and wondering if a guy who can shoot only 30% from three is actually going to make it. So the Jazz lose Derek Favors. They trade him away because they need to trade him. By the way, real quickly, again, let me go back real quick. After the Jazz made the deal for Mike Conley, did you expect Favors to get traded away?
I was 50-50 on it. I was thinking, well, they kept him. That's a great perk of that whole deal because they kept Derek Favors. But then I'm thinking, well, if they're going to do anything in free agency, the only way they can is by moving on from him. So, and it was always in the back of my mind. There was optimism.
Yeah.
Because you love Derek. But then the reality is, in order for the Jazz to really get better, they were going to have to say goodbye to Derek. And I don't think anybody really wanted to really approach that until the time came, because you hate to see somebody like that who's been with the franchise for so long and has been so great to have to go. But the reality the whole time, and Derek knew this, and I think the Jazz organization knew it, if they were going to be major players in free agency, they had to say goodbye to Derek, and that's exactly what happened.
So power forward is another position the Jazz are looking for. Do you think that's the next move? Maybe not completely, because now they released Howell Neto, so they need to look for a third point guard. But to me, it seems like they kind of need to go after a power forward next, just to kind of fill that out. Any guys that you think could fill that role? Because whomever they take on now is going to be making the veteran minimum, so not a lot of money. So it's not like you're going to – I was going to throw out Jabari Parker, but I think Jabari is looking for a lot more money, and I think there are teams out there who are not as good or are going to be willing to pay Jabari a lot of money. But there are other guys out there, your Noah Vonleh's, your Luke Mbah-Mutes, your Jeff Green's, your Anthony Tolliver's. Whether it's those guys or anyone else, anyone that you're looking for that you think the Jazz could be interested in, and in turn, they may be interested in the Utah Jazz.
You hit one that I think might work. I think Jeff Green is one you might look at that maybe you could get for the minimum. Stanley Johnson's out there, and he didn't work out with the Pistons, and he was a lottery pick. Maybe the Jazz could find a way to get something out of him. Again, you're talking about a vet minimum, and you're not giving up a lot. But I think the four positions might be where they're looking at, because Ed Davis is basically a five, and he's basically going to be playing backup minutes for Rudy. You know, I don't see him being an offensive threat at all. So you're looking at somebody who can play that four, maybe. I mean, can they go out and find some guy that could start at the four? I think that would be pretty tough with the vet minimum. How about Tabo Cephalosha?
Interesting. Would he want to come back on a veteran minimum? Or can he make...
If it's his best option, yeah. I don't know.
The only thing worried about there is just that he just hasn't played a lot of games for the Jazz, and I think that has somewhat to do with his health, and so I think you have to question that a little bit.
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson?
I thought he played more of a three, but I guess in this NBA you can play a three or a four, so...
You mentioned Jabari Parker. I mean, I don't think that they have any interest in Parker, but if it's at the vet minimum and you have a chance to bring in a guy that can score, I don't know. Maybe they kick the tires on that a little bit, but it's hard to believe that Jabari Parker. Well, you know what? I mean, he's running out of options. His value is declining rapidly. You know, for Washington to walk away from the Bulls, I mean, all these teams saying thanks but no thanks, it's pretty discouraging. And you wonder if, in order to come here and kind of restart his career, that maybe he would consider that, and maybe with a different attitude, especially when it comes to defense. But I don't know. I'm very doubtful that that would even be a possibility on both ends.
First of all, why'd you have to bring up Stanley Johnson? Because now I'm intrigued.
I
don't know what the Jazz do with him, because he's such a poor shooter, and he came in playing the three, but he's a tough dude.
That's why. Yeah, I know.
It seems like
they're looking for shooters, and he's not one.
Yeah, it seems like the Jazz could do something with him. And maybe they could still get him and someone else, but I guess I just see the Jazz maybe going that, as you mentioned, that Jeff Green route, that Noah Vonleh route, where maybe not great shooters, but they're going to come in and they're going to do their thing. Of course, I'm also the guy who thought the Jazz were going to build around the edges and just keep Derek Favors. So, you know, what do I know? So I think we know what their finishing five is, and that's going to be Mitchell, Conley, Boyan, Ingles, and Gobert. Is that their starting five, too? Or do you think they try and bring someone else in to start at the four, but let Ingles finish the games out and have Joe come off the bench? Because he is a valuable guy with the second unit.
I'll be very curious to see how Quinn Snyder handles this. So as of right now, I think your best players, your best five, are Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Joe Ingles, right? But that doesn't mean you have to start all five of those guys. What about bringing Joe Ingles off the bench as a sixth man? That's kind of intriguing. Giving him a chance to have the ball in his hands, running some pick and roll with a second unit. I don't know. But then, of course, if Joe Ingles is not starting, who is starting? Who do we think that's on the bench ends up starting? Does Royce O'Neal play in that starting lineup? Do they start George Niang, who can stretch the floor and knock down threes? I don't know. They'll have some options there. I think that I feel pretty confident saying I know who's going to end the game.
Yeah.
And that's the five guys I mentioned. That doesn't mean that those five guys will start. They might try some versatility. I mean, Quinn did a lot of things with Derek Favors and Jay Crowder. And the Jazz had more success with Jay Crowder offensively in some of those lineups. So Quinn Snyder is going to be really creative, and he's got some things to work with there. So I don't feel comfortable saying that just because those five are the best five on the roster means that they're going to all start.
Seems like they need a big guy to kind of, and I'm not talking about tall guy. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm talking about a tough guy that's going to be able to come in.
Jake Crowder.
Yeah, basically, with a little bit of muscle and be able to kind of shove some guys around and do some good things. But
maybe their second round pick is that guy.
And maybe he is. Maybe he is. Maybe he's that guy who I don't know, maybe plays 15 to 20 to maybe 25 minutes a game, but just comes in, starts the game out on a good foot. And then when it comes down to the end, I agree with you. I think we already know what the finishing five is if they all stay healthy. Ceilings now. Ceilings for the Western Conference. What is the ceilings for the teams that we think could, I'm not going to say are, but could make the NBA playoffs? So we'll start out with the Jazz first. Let's just not even wait. I think it's either Western Conference Finals or NBA Finals. I really think they're that good. I know there's still some ifs out there, but we're talking about today. I think it's Western Conference Finals or NBA Finals. I think they are that good, and especially if they're able to add a couple of veterans who can kind of round out that roster and give them some playing time in the middle of the season.
Until we find out where Kawhi's going, the Jazz ceiling is NBA championship. They can win a title.
So you're hoping he stays with the Raptors. Okay.
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny that the Jazz might have a better shot of winning a title if he goes to L.A.
Interesting.
Raptors are the defending champs, and if they roll back the same guys.
True. No. I get that.
Without the Warriors,
I get that.
Fully loaded like they were last year. I mean, I don't know. Who the Lakers going to have around LeBron and AD that makes them a serious threat? I don't know yet. We'll have to wait and see, but yeah. I'm pretty skeptical that the Lakers can piece together enough depth to really, truly contend. Although, if you're going to ask me about the Lakers, because you know what?
Yeah,
I'm going to say NBA championship if they add Kawhi, if they make shrewd signings. I'm skeptical because I don't trust their front office at all. Their organization is a circus. They have LeBron. They have AD. Kyle Kuzma is terrific. And if they get Kawhi Leonard, all of a sudden they got a big three plus Kyle Kuzma, who's a quality starter and has star potential. That's a team that's going to be a force. But again, where's the depth? And how many games are LeBron and Kawhi going to play next year? Anthony Davis has had injury issues.
Well, and Kawhi is used to load management now.
Load management is that team going to need next year?
Yeah, exactly.
So these are legit questions that surround that thing. Just because they got the big names doesn't mean they've got it in the bag. It's just, and who's shooting on that team? Where's the shooting coming from?
It's going to be from guys who are not going to make a lot of money, who are going to be able to, who are going to be willing to sacrifice. But a lot of those shooters have already left. They've already signed.
Great point. Who's left? So many guys are already committed. Who's left to go sign up with the Lakers right now? There's not a lot of good guys left in the league that can play. that can play at a high level that can help them. There's just not a lot of depth left in free agency.
Okay, real quickly, we'll go through these. So you say Lakers possible NBA championship,
yes,
depending on how they fill out the roster. What about the Clippers? If they sign Kawhi,
Western Finals. I don't think they have enough. Kawhi is unbelievable, and that team minus Kawhi gave the Warriors a run in the first round last year. But you know, I'm not sold on that. Even if Kawhi goes there, with everybody in the West, they're not better than Houston. They're not better than the Lakers. They're not better than the Jazz.
What about the Warriors?
No. I think they'll make the playoffs, but it's going to be a struggle.
Really? Okay.
Well, I
would say Klay's going to play late in the season, real late in the season.
So all that pressure on Steph to hold up that ship for that long.
Hey, they got D'Angelo Russell, man. Uh-oh, he just rolled his eyes.
It was a terrible fit. We didn't even talk about the Warriors. I don't know. That was weird. Like, we put the Warriors on such a pedestal for so long in their front office because they made all the right moves. But then it's like, well, how many of those moves did they luck into? And, you know, Steph used to have ankle problems, and then he turns into a star. That was fortunate. Klay Thompson won a huge steal in the draft. Who could have predicted that? And then Kevin Durant wants to go play there because it's a perfect fit, and he wants to win titles. So did we give too much credit to the Warriors over all this time? Because that move was, in my mind, a panicky move. It's not a good fit at all. It's not a guy that they're going to have there long term. It just felt panicky and temporary to me.
I think they're just looking for stars, and they'll see where it goes from here. Whether they keep that team intact the way it is, that will be interesting to see. Real quickly, Nuggets. Western Conference Finals. Okay. Blazers.
Semifinals.
That's probably what I would say, too. I'll just say Thunder first round because that seems to be the going thing
right now. That's their ceiling,
and
it always will be.
Rockets. I think finals. I think they still...
NBA championship.
Yes. New Orleans. First round, probably.
Their ceiling is first round playoffs.
They're fun. Not only with Favors. I mean, look at all the fun guys who are on that team
Real quick. Derek Favors at center. Zion. Ingram, uh-huh. Drew Holiday, Lonzo Ball, Frank Jackson off the bench, J.J. Redick maybe in the starting lineup or off the bench. I like that team. That's a really good team. Yeah. That's a fun team.
Yeah, exactly. Mavs, maybe first round. I'm not sure they make it.
They don't make the playoffs,
which is
crazy because they signed the unicorn.
Yeah.
And Doncic is amazing, and they might pick up Danny Green if Kawhi leaves and goes to L.A., but the West is too good. The West is just too good.
Last Spurs. I'd probably say first round again.
I think the Spurs are going to miss the playoffs next year.
Really? Okay.
Somebody, okay.
I'm not going to be surprised if they do. I'm just saying.
So the Lakers are going to make the playoffs, right? And so out of the top, who's dropping out? Of the playoff teams that made the playoffs last year, who's out?
If Kawhi doesn't go to L.A., meaning the Clippers, not the Lakers, I'm going to say the Clippers, I think they could possibly lose out. I know that they're gritty and they're tough and everything like that, and they showed a lot last year. Can they do it 2 years in a row? That I'm a little unsure of. I would probably say them. I'm not going to pick on the Thunder. I think they've got two stars, and I think they fight their way into the playoffs. I'd probably say the Clippers are
so
the most
likely. So for Dallas
likely.
Or New Orleans to make the playoffs, assuming the Lakers are one of those two teams, two of those teams have to go out. So the Clippers and the Spurs. I mean, it's crazy.
Bloodbath.
Yes, it's going to be tough again.
Real quickly, last thing we want to get to here on the Jazz Notes podcast. Does anyone scare you in the East? I guess you would probably say Toronto if Kawhi returns.
The Bucks they're reloaded. I thought the sneaky move of getting Wesley Matthews, Chris Middleton back. Adding another Lopez was cool. Keeping Brock Lopez. If Toronto gets Kawhi, they're the defending champs. I love what the Sixers did. I think getting rid of Jimmy Butler is going to make them better.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Jimmy Butler.
He did so much for them in the playoffs where they basically turned the ball over to him because Ben Simmons can't do that yet. So in reality, if this is going to happen, it's going to be because Ben Simmons is going to have to step up.
Why is Jimmy Butler keep bouncing around the league if he's a superstar?
No, I understand.
He is a superstar, but why does he keep bouncing around?
Bad egg.
They offered him a max deal 5 years and he turned it down.
Yeah. No, I get it.
What they got. I think they're good.
I
love Kemba to Boston. I think the Pacers are going to be good. Brogdon and Oladipo together in the backcourt, they're going to be tough to score on.
Real quickly, going back to the Sixers, I think, as Jazz fans will probably say, I think they probably like what they got. Even though everyone liked Tobias Harris, I think how everything turned out for the Jazz and for how much Tobias Harris, how much money he was given by the Sixers.
$36 million a
year. Woo! I think the Jazz are happy
with
the team they
have. For a guy that's never been an all-star.
And now he's going to have to switch from being, what, their four to their three? Because Al Horford is now going to be the four there. I guess he can play a little four,
which
too.
Which is strange. I mean, yeah, that's we could spend a whole segment on the Sixers. But I do like them. I think they're going to be good again.
All right, that's going to do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. I want to thank Jeremiah for staying late, for me coming in late. And we hope that you enjoy this edition of the Jazz Notes podcast. We are powered by KSL Sports. Rate us, give us a review, tell us what you think. We love it when you do that. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.